This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for May 8th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, Syngenta has rejected a takeover offer from Monsanto, saying it has severely undervalued the worth of the Swiss biotech company. We'll have that in other stories. Also, Todd Gleason discusses the importance of the renewable fuels standard, and we'll take a look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Friday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat 5.10.5 up 11.75. July 5.08.5 up 8.75. Soft May wheat settled at 4.74.5 up 10.75. July 4.71.5 up 8.75. May corn settled at 3.58.5 up 3/4. July 3.63 up 1.5. September 3.68.5 up 1.25. December 3.78.25 up 1.25. May soybeans settled at 9.84.5 up 3. July 9.76.25 up 1.25. November 9.52 up 1. May soybean meal settled at 3.15.20 down 2.20. May soybean oil settled at 32.80 up 49. June live cattle settled, well, these are last trades now, 151.40 on the June live cattle, up 202.5. And May feeders, 215.97.5, up 107.5. And May lean hogs at 81.20 are up 135. And those are the settlements and last trades from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says planting will continue in many eastern areas today before rain expands across the region into Saturday. Frequent rounds of showers and thunderstorms will occur through Monday across the Midwest, and planting will be halted in many areas. The rain will provide a timely boost in soil moisture in the lower Midwest, where significant drying has occurred, and much of the Midwest will be left with nearly ideal soil conditions for early crop development. The driest areas in the Dakotas and Minnesota will also benefit from additional rain Saturday evening into Monday. Improvements in soil moisture will occur, and conditions for early crop development should become highly favorable. However, rain in the Dakotas and Minnesota will not likely be heavy enough to significantly increase subsoil moisture, and follow-up rain will be needed. Frost and a few light freezes may occur Tuesday through Thursday mornings in the upper Midwest, and some early planted soybeans may be damaged by the cold. However, temperatures should not be cold enough for a long enough period of time to do more than burn back vegetative development, but the situation will need to be closely monitored, as slightly cooler than expected temperatures could cause more serious damage to the crop. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He is in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave. Good to be with you again.
Well, the wheat market, Mike, did traders take another look at the quality wheat tour numbers from yesterday and after debating them a little further put some weather premium back in this market?
I would put that probably third of three reasons as far as importance as why as they came back. I think it was certainly in the back of traders' minds, but I think the big thing that happened today, Dave, was the trade was waiting to see what the dollar was going to do. The wheat trade, I should say, and the wheat did recover nearly all of this week's gains, and I think mainly because the unemployment report didn't generate a rally back above technical resistance in the June dollar index. I think also, even though the morning map showed it, I was talking to some colleagues in Chicago about it early on in the morning, no one really wanted to trade it, I don't think, and that is the hard red and spring wheat weather. Looks very, very cold next Tuesday through Thursday, and so as we come out of this weekend rain, I think we ought to be watching very closely the upper Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, the Dakotas, Nebraska even, and parts of Wisconsin could even get down to 28 to 32 degrees. So not really getting to corn country or bean country, but as far as hard red wheat country and spring wheat country especially, there could be some issues with frost or freeze damage depending on whether there's snow coming in first or whether it waits until after the cold front comes through. So I'd say unemployment report, weather, and then the quality tour probably brought the technicals and the short covering back around to give us a decent close. Nothing spectacular, but decent.
You mentioned the dollar making a new low for its current move today and appears to be making a new low for the week as well. Probed 93.88 on the index today. And that is a suspected support shelf.
Yeah, and I think you probably do have enough good economic data, and goodness knows, look at the stock market rally today. It's up several percentage points at this point going into its close. I think between the economic data being mixed and the stock market rally, equities not wanting to give up yet, the dollar's probably hemmed into a trading range. But you know what? I'll take that because I think the bias in the trade in commodities has been it's going to go up, up, and up, similar to what it did in 98.99. And we've talked about that. Right now, I don't think the economic fundamentals are there to present that kind of a case, especially if we walk away without a Greek exit from the euro currency. And with Britain and their election over with now, I think maybe things will calm down when it comes to talk about Britain leaving the European Union as well. So I would love to see a trading range develop in the dollar and a little bit firmer interest rates, because then I think the inflationary bias by the trade would start to come back a little bit more than what we've seen in all of 2015 so far and all of 2014 as well.
So it's probably the wheat gave some support to the corn today, but lurking just around the corner on Tuesday is a WASDE report, and certainly that will have a number of numbers that traders will be focused on, including world corn production numbers, and I guess Safra's came out with some new numbers today.
Yeah, they did. Safra's came out with a big increase in their estimate for the 14-15 corn, coming in at 82.3 million tons. That compares with last year's 77.2, and it compares with USDA's number of 75 million tons. And so you're talking about that being a potential negative force come Tuesday's report, as you kind of allude to. I really think, Dave, at this stage of the game, if we have a low in the wheat market, we want to watch for that 200-month moving average in the front-end corn, 366 area, to be seeing a close above that level after the report numbers come out. I think that would do a lot to offset some of the fears that we're going to go down at least one more time before pollination when it comes to the corn. And I think given the bean-corn ratio that we've seen and the world supply-demand balance, even with this Brazilian update, I think that generally speaking, the USDA numbers for the trade anyway probably need to feed the bull in soybeans and feed the bear in the wheat and the corn, just because of the way the funds have lined up heading into Tuesday's numbers.
Yeah, and then you add on top of that China's oilseed group also raised corn production numbers by some 17 million metric tons. So I think those world numbers may hold key on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big number will be the U.S. ending stocks number for corn and beans, because it's the first one, after all, since the baseline report. So you're going to get a gauge of whether you're a quantitative fund or a medium-term analyst like me. You're going to get a gauge of where we're starting out at. Mm-hmm. And are we going to be closer to the low end of $1.5 billion on corn or the high end of almost $2.3? That's, you know, 716.
Yeah, the range is huge, right?
I'm sorry?
I said the range is huge.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, 716 million bushels. And the same with the beans. 310 would solidify $10 beans, in my opinion, especially if we had any weather whatsoever come July, August. But then you have 582 on the upside. And so here again, 272 million bushels on a range there. So I think the very first number will be U.S. ending stocks for both corn and beans. But you're right, as far as the ability of the market to sustain a rally, the world numbers, I think, will play a big role.
So when we come back Monday, do we look at a small range choppy market to Tuesday?
I think the opposite, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
I think what I've seen here the last few days is a wider price range, and I think the short-term price volatility will only get bigger, especially if some of these rain maps and these cold weather temperatures show up, heavy rains and cold weather in the upper Midwest. I think that'll breed a little bit more volatility. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it with the clients. And if we get a strong surge back up to 975, 980 in November beans, I'll want to get some catch-up hedges in place with known cost positions going into the report.
Does some of that volatility get muted if we come back Monday afternoon and see 75% of the corn crop is in the ground and some 25 to 30% of the soybean crop's in the ground?
I doubt it because of the report. If it were a non-report day the very next day, I think that the trade probably would really calm itself down because they'd say we have no threat whatsoever. And keep in mind, the trade right now is in a 1997-98 El Nino mindset where early planting, cool, wet weather equals tremendous yields. And I think this is where, again, the U.S. ending stocks figure, they're going to work off that number and say, okay, how much bigger could it be given the weather pattern and given the planting pace? So I think that actually adds a little bit more volatility if the numbers are bigger.
Thank you much, Mike. You
have
a great weekend, Dave. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Atchison, Kansas.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, Swiss biotechnology company Syngenta today says that it has rejected a takeover offer from Monsanto Company, a bid that it said greatly undervalued its prospects. Monsanto had offered to buy the company at a price of $45.5 billion. Syngenta's directors also unanimously rejected the offer because it underestimates significant risks to a deal, including regulatory and public scrutiny in many countries. A new study by agricultural economists at Kansas State University and the University of Missouri says that any benefits from U.S. country of origin labeling rules for meat are insufficient to offset the costs. The study found little to no evidence of a measurable increase in consumer demand for beef or pork as a result of cool requirements. The World Trade Organization is expected by May 18th to issue a final ruling on a case brought by Canada and Mexico against cool. A WTO dispute panel in November ruled that cool gives imported livestock less favorable treatment than domestic livestock. Lawmakers and industry representatives fear the WTO will uphold its previous decision and pave the way for trade retaliation by Canada and Mexico against an array of U.S. products. Six U.S. senators, including Dick Durbin of Illinois, are demanding that the Environmental Protection Agency end year-long delays over release of the renewable fuels standard. Durbin says, quote, "The industry won't grow when there is no market certainty. The EPA should act quickly and put forth robust RFS requirements for 2014 and beyond." The senators specifically pressed the EPA to set strong biodiesel standards for 2014 through 2017. The Food and Drug Administration says that Bluebell ice cream had evidence of Listeria bacteria in its Oklahoma manufacturing plant as far back as March of 2013. The FDA says the Texas-based company continued to ship ice cream produced in that plant after inadequate cleaning. The FDA yesterday released results of its investigations into Bluebell's plants in Oklahoma, Texas, and Alabama. The FDA listed 17 separate positive tests for Listeria on equipment from March of 13 through February of 15. Neither Bluebell nor the FDA has said why the Oklahoma plant was not closed after repeated findings of Listeria. Bluebell CEO Paul Cruz says it will be several months at a minimum before its ice cream is back in stores. Three Listeria deaths in Kansas are now linked to the ice cream, along with seven illnesses in Texas, Oklahoma, and Arizona. China's imports contracted again in April in a new sign of economic weakness. Imports fell by a bigger-than-expected 16.2% over a year earlier. Exports fell 6.4%. Economic growth in China fell to 7% in the first quarter of the year, its lowest since 2009. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency now says it will not update the renewable fuels standard mandates until November. Todd Gleason reports this year's RFS, no matter when it is finally released, is really important to the biodiesel industry.
More often than not, when the federal government's renewable fuel standard is discussed, people are thinking about corn-based ethanol or other feedstocks that can produce ethanol. However, when U.S. EPA finally releases the RFS mandates, it may be the biodiesel industry that pays the most attention, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin.
The industry for which the RFS is really a life or death matter is biodiesel. Because if the EPA would choose to go back to the statutory levels of the RFS mandates, at least for a few years here in the short run, it would launch likely the biggest boom in biodiesel's history. But if they choose to stay on the path of the proposals from late 2013, it basically cuts the knees out from the industry. So they're sitting there right on the edge, waiting to find out what happens.
This edge made the industry unhappy with the federal government earlier this year when it opened the door for biodiesel imported from Argentina to qualify as an advanced biofuel under the U.S. RFS mandates. Scott Irwin sees this move far more favorably than the industry.
I favor the position that the EPA is likely to move the mandate levels back up near or at the statutory levels, at least by 2015, if not 2016. That is going to necessitate a tremendous boom in biodiesel production, more than U.S. production capacity. So one view of the Argentine biodiesel announcement is that it's a precursor to them going back to the statutory levels, which would require that they can document that there's enough registered biodiesel production in the U.S. and outside the U.S. to fill the mandates.
It may be, then, that the January announcement allowing Argentine biodiesel to qualify as an advanced biofuel in the United States sets the stage for U.S. EPA to follow the letter of the law as written by Congress. It's not possible to do so without additional gallons of advanced fuel from some source. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the cash grain market is Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds. He is in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
We have a WASDE report due out on Tuesday. And if you look at the trade guesses for range for corn, It goes all the way from 1.551 to 2.267 ending stocks. And I'm going, wow, what a range, 700 million. And I got to ask you, how could that potentially reflect itself in Basis post-report?
Well, I think a person has to understand there's so many different lines of thinking as far as feed usage goes, you know, with animal units as far as the pork industry and chickens before we got into the flu. We're fairly high. Obviously, cattle placements have been good compared to last year. So there's definitely some different lines of thinking there. And then, of course, there's different lines of thinking as far as what the total crop size would end up being. I mean, I'm probably in the middle of that range. I think that 1.5 is obviously way low, and I think 2.2 is probably a little bit extreme to the high side. I think, you know, somewhere in that 1.9 or a little bit lower is probably about where I'm going to be sitting.
Does 1.9 reflect current reality for Basis?
Well, I think whenever you look at Basis, you know, the person has to understand this. The Basis has continued to improve simply because the farmer's been so tight-fisted. We have a wealth of bushels in the farmer's hands still, and what I keep cautioning guys is that, yes, we could get some sort of a weather market to drive the new crop higher, pull the old crop along with it, but if you're going to have that happen, you're going to lose a chunk of that to Basis because everyone's waiting to sell.
So that being the case, are you finding producers finding that argument pretty rational and relevant, or are they saying, no, we're going to hold it to July?
Well, there's just a lot of guys that are holding. You know, I don't see a lot of guys selling stuff. A lot of the guys that I've talked to have said, you know, we got to wait on a weather market if nothing else. You know, the general line of thinking is, hey, Basis continues to improve. You know, why would it quit? But anybody that's in the grain business understands that, you know, there's going to be a fair amount of Basis taken off if we get a 20, 30-cent rally some Monday morning if we have a major weather scare coming up. So we have to be very cognizant of the fact if we get a 30-cent rally, we only get 10, 15 cents out of it.
So does it make sense to do something on the Basis side with your marketing right now?
Well, I think as far as cash corn goes, by all means, you know, cash corn and cash beans are two completely different stories, of course, because there's not very many cash beans out in the countryside because everybody sold them early on. But as far as cash corn goes, by all means, if you can get a Basis contract written for little to nothing, then I would definitely be doing so.
Talk about the soybeans and talk about new crop marketing of soybeans.
Well, I think whenever you look at new crop marketing of soybeans, it's definitely been one of those things that's been tough to put your finger on. Everyone's wondering, why in the world are these things still hanging around whenever we've got the size of a Brazilian crop that's going to be on hand going into harvest this year? Then on the other side of that, you know, obviously demand is phenomenal. So whenever I'm looking at new crop beans, I plain and simple, I just want to go back to basics. I just want to know, you know, what can I make money at? And so if I know I can make money at 950 beans, then I should definitely be protecting 950 beans because I think there's still the possibility that we could definitely run lower. Now, I want to keep the upside open on a portion of those, but I definitely want to be protecting at a level where I know I can at least break even.
All right, let's have your prices today then, please.
Well, I don't have any prices in front of me today.
Oh, well, that's fine. Thanks much, Matt. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for your time.
That's Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. It's National Coconut Cream Pie Day. Coconut is first mentioned in English print in 1555. It comes from the Spanish and Portuguese word coco, which means monkey face. The origin of the coconut is subject to controversy, with South Asia, South America, and New Zealand, among other nations, all claiming to be the oldest source. By the way, coconuts are not just for eating. Partial list of its uses include making of potting compost, charcoal, shirt buttons, cosmetics, and for sound effects. On this day in agricultural history in 1842, Emil Christian Hansen was born. He was a Danish botanist who developed new methods to culture yeast. He revolutionized the beer industry and proved that there are different species of yeast. He refused to patent the method, but instead made it available for free to other brewers. In 1855, John Gates was born. Gates was an inventor, promoter, and barbed wire manufacturer. In 1886, Coca-Cola was first sold to the public at Jacobs Pharmacy in Atlanta, Georgia. By the way, until 1905, Coke was marketed as a brain and nerve tonic. And in 1945, Andrew Sherrett was born. He was an expert on the origins of agriculture. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Boy, it's springtime still across a big part of the nation, and that is generating quite a contrast in air mass temperatures and more aggressive weather. We've had a lot of severe weather this week, of course, across a big part of the central and southern plains, and now we've got a new storm system on the charts that's going to impact the northern parts of the U.S. plains and eventually into the upper parts of the Midwest as we go through the weekend. Low pressure center will form in the central plains today. It will become a very strong low pressure system tomorrow before moving to the northeast across the eastern Dakotas and Minnesota into parts of Wisconsin. The storm system could actually produce some heavy, wet snow in parts of the northern plains. I know that's a long ways removed from our region, but I wanted to make a point out of it because some of the livestock there, it could be threatened by the storm. We're talking about 1 to 2 feet of snow possible in western South Dakota and 3 to 6 inches across some of the agricultural regions in the northern plains. The upper Midwest will see mostly a little bit of rain from this event, but what is interesting there is that after the system passes early next week, we're going to pull some colder air into the upper parts of the Mississippi River Basin, force temperatures down into some 30-degree range, and might bring a little frost and a couple of light freezes to some of the upper Midwest. That could result in a little burning of early emerged corn and soybean crops in that area. The heart of the Midwest is going to experience a bit of shower and thunderstorm pattern as we go forward through the weekend. The storm system I just mentioned that impacts the northern U.S. plains will also have influence on the Corn Belt. We'll see a new line of thunderstorms working their way through Kansas and Missouri into Nebraska and western Iowa as we go through late Saturday evening and into Sunday. Until then, we'll likely see just a scattering of light showers and thunderstorms occurring across maybe 40 to 45% of the Midwest, much of which will be in the lower and eastern areas or across our region here. So Illinois to parts of Michigan and Ohio will see those showers. The line of storms that will be more intense in the western Corn Belt Saturday night into Sunday morning will bring some locally heavy rain and maybe some severe weather, but the system is expected to weaken as it shifts to the east. We'll see a few strong thunderstorms in parts of Illinois on Sunday going into Monday morning, and then the precipitation will fall apart again, and we'll see just light showers occurring through the rest of the Midwest. The bottom line is that most of us will be able to still get some work done this weekend and early next week, just going to have to dodge the bullet, so to speak. I have to watch out for the precipitation events, keep an eye on radar, but there should be reason enough that we can still move in through some of these fields. The temperature bias is going to continue to be warm, and that will help us to accelerate drying rates whenever the sun is available. And it looks like we'll see the high temperatures today peaking out in the upper 70s and 80s across the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest. High temperatures tomorrow will be similar. And then on Saturday, or actually on Sunday, I guess we'll be looking at temperatures still running 70s with a few lower 80s still from southeastern Illinois into southern Ohio and parts of Kentucky. So having the temperatures warm like that and a little bit of sunshine between the rain events should still allow some field progress to take place. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.